When ordinary people meet an amazing God, this is part three. Tonight we're going to start looking at the life of Joseph, trusting God when life is unfair. God is good, and life is unfair. Those are two true statements, and you have to hold them both together most of the time. Genesis 37, we're going to look at most of that chapter tonight. If you have your study notes, we're going to go fairly quickly. The choice of Joseph and the resulting family bitterness. Look at the first 11 verses. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings, his father Abraham, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel, that's Jacob, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age. I'll talk about that. And he made a robe for him of many colors. Everybody knows of Jacob's coat of many colors, a robe technically, but we like to think it was a coat. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Joseph had a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Here, this is the dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf rose and stood upright. Behold, your sheaves gathered round it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us?" And so they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun, the moon, the 11 stars were bowing down to me." And they would figure out 11 stars, what that meant, with the 12 children. When he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I, your mother and your brothers indeed come and bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And that's exactly what happens, of course, later on, if you're reading through that on the online Bible program. His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in his mind. There are a couple of factors that make for a sorry situation here. First, 37:3 says that Jacob loved Joseph more than any of the other sons. Now, it's easy to read that real quickly, but if you know a little bit of Bible in the Old Testament, it's ironic that Jacob should have made that mistake. Isaac and Rebekah had Jacob and Esau, and his mother always favored Jacob, while Isaac always preferred Esau. Jacob grew up in a home and saw the kind of division and peril that it brings when one parent loves one more than the other. And here he's doing the exact same thing. If you remember, Jacob went and worked. Remember, he went and worked for, he wanted Rachel. He saw Rachel in the Hebrew. He saw Rachel and said, "Hubba, hubba." Yes, sir, that was the woman for him. And he wanted to marry her. Laban said, "Well, work 7 years for me." And Jacob worked 7 years, and it says it felt like a week. And the wedding took place, and lo and behold, Jacob found out that he got Leah instead of Rachel, older Leah. And she wasn't the one he really wanted. She did not make his heart sing like Rachel did. And by the way, if the thought ever goes through your mind at some dark moment in your soul that I'm married, you know what, I should never have married this person, and people tell me that all the time in my office, "You don't understand, we were never meant to be married." I want to tell you something about that, that a lot of people don't think through. Jacob married Leah. He did not want her for a wife one bit. Jacob and Leah had children, one of whom was a boy named Judah. And we still sing a chorus in Sunday school. The Lion of Judah, remember, shall break in. You know who came out of Judah? Jesus did. Don't you go writing off what God can do in your marriage just because at some dark moment you think, oh, we shouldn't even be married. Jacob didn't want Leah at all. When he married her, it's just a fact, he felt no love for her in his heart. She was not what he was expecting. And through her, God brought a Savior into the world. And if you forget everything else I say tonight and just remember that, it might be worth remembering and coming to church for. So Jacob, preferring Joseph with his background, makes just no sense at all. The second thing that the text says is that God had chosen Joseph for a special role in the nation of Israel. That's in verses 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And this would place him over his brothers, hence Joseph's dreams. Whether he was wise to share them or not, he wasn't lying. These were the dreams that he had. And here's what happens. Jacob loves Joseph more. God is going to do something special through Joseph. And the people around Joseph in his own family can't stand to see God blessing Joseph more than he's blessing them. It's envy. It's envy. And envy spreads like poison, even among godly people. How you react to the... Here's a good measure of where your heart is spiritually. How do you react to God's outpoured blessing on someone when they seem to be elevated above where he's using you? Do you rejoice with them? The writer of Hebrews warns against the particular dangers of the root of bitterness. Hebrews 12:15. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God. Well, how do people... He's writing to the church. How do people miss God's grace? How do Christians miss the outpouring, the lavishness of God's grace in their lives? And the writer says, well, here's one way. Bitterness. Envy. Bitterness. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. That's a fascinating phrase. When the writer says that bitterness has this tendency to have many defiled, it spreads. He means that its growth in our hearts is far more sinister than we realize. And I'll tell you why. Sins like envy, bitterness, that's what we're talking about here, but covetousness, the inward sins. We have a tendency to allow secret sins more time to grow and fester and infect. And so inward sins, secret sins, attitudinal sins, have a tendency to pollute our heart more than almost any other sins because we can carry them around for so long and you don't see what's in my heart. And so I have no outward motive to repent of them. And second, because the sin like bitterness, Joseph's brothers against him, because that sin of bitterness or envy, it's a secret sin, it's an inward sin, we usually deceive ourselves into thinking that we can keep the consequences of that sin inside our hearts as well. And it never can happen. It never can happen. Bitterness is a loaded gun in our hearts. It makes us restless for more wickedness. And here's the example. It's in our story. Let me just keep reading a little farther than I read in the opening text. This isn't in your notes. But it's 37 verses 19 to 28. And it says, they, that's Joseph's brothers, said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Okay, that's their little brother. This dreamer, that's how they talk to him now. Come now. In other words, this is their brother. This is their own flesh and blood, their family, and they can't see past the... They're thinking of the dreams that Joseph had. Okay? And they can't see anything else about Joseph except those dreams that they would be bowing down to him. They're obsessed with this. Joseph now to them isn't their brother, it's the dreamer. He's that one with those dreams that we hate so much. Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him, throw him into one of the pits. And then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him. And we will see what becomes of his dreams. But when Reuben, he's the oldest brother, when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let's not take his life. Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Cast him into this pit here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father. So he thought, you know what, I'll come back later on and I'll pull him out after he's learned his lesson and he can go back to Jacob. And so when Joseph came to his brothers, 23, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. They took him and cast him into the pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. And then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Remember that. These people are going to Egypt. And God's doing something. And then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites so we get some cash at least. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh, and his brothers listened to him. Then Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. So, bitterness. It's an inward attitude. It'll always spill over in some outward action. And here's these brothers, the older brothers, probably never dreamed. Joseph came, he shared those dreams, their hearts were turned against him, and they probably never imagined. When they sat at breakfast, they probably never imagined that before supper, they would sell their own brother into slavery. That's what bitterness does. It makes you rabid. Point number two, reaping the fruits of their deception. 29 to 35, now they're going to con the old man. Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit. He tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, the boy is gone, and I, where shall I go? He had said that he would look after Joseph, Reuben. And then they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, dipped the robe in the blood. There were no tests for DNA back in these days, okay? Blood was blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father, Jacob, and said, this we found. Please identify whether it is your son, not our brother, your son's robe or not. He identified it and said, it is. It's my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. And then Jacob tore his garments, put on sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many, many days, and all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. And thus his father wept for him. Think about this. Think about this just for a minute. Think about the principle of reaping what you sow. Do you remember the story, Jacob? Now he's... Think of him as a young man, Jacob and Esau. And they want to get Isaac's blessing. Remember the story? And Jacob and Esau go in, and Jacob's going to con Isaac out of the blessing. And what Jacob does, with Rebekah's help, they kill a goat. Joseph's robe here? They kill a goat. They put the fur, because Esau was a hairy brute and Jacob wasn't. And they put it on his arms. Isaac's blind, and they go into the tent. Isaac says, I don't know, you sound like Jacob. And then holds out his arm, and Isaac goes, well, it's Esau. That's Jacob. Jacob the deceiver. Here's Jacob as an old man. And his sons come and they kill a goat. And they dip the robe in it. And they bring it to Jacob and they say, "See, look what happened to Joseph." The world says what goes around comes around, and they just mean kind of fate. The Bible says you reap what you sow. It always matters to please God and to be upright. Whether you see it at that moment or not, it always makes sense. Everybody gets to a place in life where sooner or later it seems unfair. Everybody. Everybody gets to a point where life seems unfair. It certainly seems so to Joseph. You read the story, you stop, and you say, what has Joseph done to deserve the treatment he's getting? Well, you could say he wasn't bright in sharing his dreams. But that's all you could say. I mean, what has Joseph done to deserve this? And the answer is, nothing. Absolutely nothing. There seems to be no relationship between cause and effect in this whole story. And this is always what makes faith challenging. We know now, because we see the whole story, that God's preparing him for a role of authority and power on the throne of Egypt. But Joseph doesn't know that. He has no idea of it. And this is an issue. Everybody needs to know the story of Joseph, if for no other reason than all of us will face this at one time or another. Adversity is always most difficult when it's most unexplainable. And Joseph, we need to remember, spent many years. We all jump down so quickly to Genesis 50, verse 20. You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. And that's fine later on. But it was years before Joseph learned all of that. Many times the essence of faith is working without answers. Hebrews 11, 1. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Joseph doesn't know what's going on. 4. I want to talk to you about being the kind of person God can use where you are instead of where you are not. Every once in a while, someone will come and say, Pastor Don, pray that God will lead me and guide me. I want to find some kind of ministry where I can really be useful to the Lord. And I almost always say, you know, you can't be useful to God where you aren't. The only place on earth you can be useful to God is where you are. Don't live your life dreaming. Just passing time. Here's the kind of person Joseph was. A, he was faithful running errands for his father. It's in verse 14. So he said to him, go now and see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock. This is Jacob talking to Joseph. Bring me word. And he sent him from the valley of Hebron and he came to Shechem. In other words, our first picture of Joseph is he's an errand boy. He's an errand boy for his dad. He's the youngest one. He's not even out there working with them. He's the flunky. Take him sandwiches. Get him coffee. Clean the barn. Joseph just does it. B, he's faithful as he served in Potiphar's house. That's in 39:4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. Now remember, Joseph, even in Potiphar's house, he's not there by choice. He doesn't want to be there. This wasn't the desire of his heart. What he's doing is he's serving the very best he can wherever he ends up. Just faithful. See, he was faithful when he was a prisoner in jail. That's in 39, 22, and 23. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were with him. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. He certainly didn't want to be in prison. That wasn't his choice at all. But he's there. What do you do? He serves so effectively, he's put in charge of the prison. You can sit and dream what you'd do if you were on this mission field or in that orphanage or had this church or were, but here's where you are. Shine where you are. 5. Oh, let me just say one more thing under that fourth point. When it came time for Joseph to be appointed as acting governor over all of Egypt, the reason he was ready for it is because God had grown him through all sorts of appointments where Joseph didn't even know what was going on. And he was faithful serving in those smaller areas, and he was ready for the larger service when God brought it his way. That's what you see in the story of Joseph. Okay, five. The amazing work of the hand of God behind the scenes in our lives. This is the last point, and I think it's really a relevant one for all of us. 39, 17 to 23. And the man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph, this is after his brothers had come, they're on their way back, and Joseph is going after them. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him, throw him into one of the pits. And then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him. We will see what becomes of his dreams." You know the story as it continues. Reuben says, "Well, let's at least not kill him." And he gets thrown into the pit. And it seems like nothing short of disaster. It's unfair, it's cruel, it's unjust. And you've had the question, and I've had the question. Where is your loving God when all this garbage happens? When it happens in your life individually, when it happens in Japan, where's your good God? Where's Joseph's God? Well, he's right there. Why isn't he doing something? Well, he is doing something. He's just not doing what Joseph's looking for, and he's not doing what we're looking for. See, many years earlier, the Lord promises the land of Canaan to Abraham. But not until the Israelites had suffered under the Egyptians for 400 years. That's in Genesis 15:13. The Lord said to Abraham, this is before he's Israel, Abraham. The Lord said to Abraham, "Know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there. They will be afflicted for 400 years. God says to Abraham, "Your people are going into a foreign land, and it's going to be for 400 years. And then God tells him something else. It's in verse 16 of Genesis 15. They're going to come back. They're going to come out of Egypt. "And they shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites." Now what's that have to do with it? The iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. So God says to Abraham that he'd bring his people into Egypt, and then when the iniquity of the Amorites was full, God would deliver his people from Egypt, and he was going to give them the land of the Amorites in Canaan. Now, when God made that promise to Abraham, Abraham wasn't strong enough to deliver God's people from Egypt. There weren't enough of them. And the Amorites weren't yet wicked enough to have their land justly taken from them. Because God didn't go through the Old Testament and just willy-nilly pluck out lands. And he's judging the Amorites for their sin. But they weren't that wicked yet. But God in his foreknowledge knows that they're going to become so corrupt that he will reach down, punish them, take their land, give it to Israel. But they're not ready for that yet. Do you see it? God has a divine timing issue on his hands in the outworking of his promise. Before God could bring his people out of Egypt, he had to get his people in to Egypt. But it's a lot more fun coming out than going in. And God isn't going to bring them out until the wickedness of the Amorites is full. And God's going to use Joseph to get the people into Egypt because they need to have somewhere to be for 400 years while the iniquity of the Amorites is piling up and God's going to judge them. Joseph doesn't know all that. What's God doing? God's working out his plan. brilliantly. God's working out His plan. And we know all things work together for good to those that love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. But you rarely see that at the moment. And the worst thing you can do is to make the mistake of judging God by isolated events when you don't know the whole plan. I had a nice conversation just this past week with some real good friends, and we were just talking about somebody that had died, a godly person, a good person. And then other people seem to thrive and prosper, and you say, where's God? Well, He's got a plan. He knows what He's doing. Only, it's not that every individual thing that happens is good. It's that all things taken together in God's plan can work for good. And it's a wonderful thing to serve a God that's that big and that sovereign and that wise. And everyone said...